the Senate Appropriations Committee wants discretionary spending for civilian agencies to drop 7% next year over fiscal 2015 levels, but the Democrats on the committee are not happy about that. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call and writes the Hawkins Here blog. And one of the things that you and I have discussed on many occasions is that just because, David, Congress is in recess as they are this week, does not mean that nothing's happening when it comes to appropriations or any of the other issues that Congress is dealing with, right?
That is true. It just all happens in ways that's very hard to see and that they kind of don't want us to know. This is some would argue this is when the real work happens, is when the cameras, the TV cameras are off and most of the reporters are away from the Capitol, is when the staff can sort of get some serious work done. And that is what's happening now, probably on all 24 bills. If you think of it as 12 in the Senate and 12 in the House, this is probably a very good week for the staff, the staffers, the clerks, to sit down and actually try and plow through the stuff that the low-hanging fruit, the easy stuff, the programs and agencies that have pretty straightforward decisions that need to be made. That's all getting tidied up because, as you and I have also said on this air to one another many times before, even if the whole thing, gets into a big fat mess, which it probably will, that mess really won't affect dozens, maybe hundreds of the programs and agencies that the people who are listening to this show might be interested in.
I won't call you Mr. Optimism then, based on your decision, declaration that this might turn into a big hot mess by the end of the fiscal year. But I will say that the whole idea of the fact that they're going to try to get a lot of work done this week, if that's the case, is encouraging because once they come back next week, they're in for a while, if I remember. I haven't looked at I don't have the schedule right in front of me, but I seem to recall that they're only out like 1 week. I think it's Independence Day until the big recess in August.
That's right. They are, I'm looking at the calendar right now. They got 4 weeks, all 4 weeks in June, then 1 week off for Independence Day, then four more weeks. So 8 out of the next 9 weeks, they're in. And this is the time of year when, you know, that most of that track needs to be laid to get as much done as possible before the big mess up in the fall. And that mess up is coming, and we sort of know the parameters. The president won't sign these bills unless they spend more money than the sequester would call for, and the Republicans haven't figured out whether or how to extract themselves from this sequester.
First of all, regarding the calendar, I have this image in my mind that either at your desk or at your home office, where most of us have, like, I have a calendar that's got pictures of my family and stuff on it, and I used to have a Williamsburg calendar because that's one of my favorite places to go. I have this image that you have one that's got members of Congress on it for some reason. I don't know why that is.
And their birthdays.
Of course.
We do have mouse pads. With the
calendar on it.
With the congressional calendar on it.
That's,
I'll get you one.
That's tremendously helpful. I would actually love one of those. But on a serious note, the timeline that we have, as I think about looking at the calendar just as I did earlier today, yes, it's possible that things could get all bollocked up between now and the end, but it seems to me we're still on a decent track in order to be able to get bills passed and then to figure out what the White House versus Congress negotiation looks like. Because that's what it'll boil down to this time, right?
That's right. It'll boil down to two. I think the first negotiation has to be with the Republicans and themselves about how to cry uncle on the sequester. I think they're going to have to allow more spending. They're going to have to come up with a plan that will get all the, I mean, if the new math of Congress is John Boehner, the House Republican Speaker, has to assume that somewhere between, 25 and 50 of the most conservative members of his 245-member team are going to say no to bending that sequester. They're super conservative, super fiscal conservative, and they will oppose this. So that means he can't come up with a number that can only pass with Republican votes because you need 218.
Mm-hmm.
Take 50 away, he's under 200. It means they got to get some Democratic help. And the Democrats aren't going to want to just make that a small number. They're not going to just want to break with the sequester in a small way, and certainly not in an only defense way. They want to ease the spending caps on both defense and domestic, and they and the president are going to demand a somewhat higher number. So two sets of negotiations, the Republicans amongst themselves and then with the Democrats, which includes the president, and that will really need to get going probably after Labor Day in order for there to for you to not have to get out your sound bite of countdown clock music out.
It's right here. I have it handy. I'm not going to play it yet because we're not
there yet.
We're not there yet. And I don't want to get people alarmed if they just happen to hear the music and don't listen to you and I jawjacking, but I have it in case we need it. Now, I missed talking to you last week because I was at the Management of Change Conference, and I have to say I was struck by the amount of people who are at not even the most senior levels of the agencies, but who are paying very close attention to this. And the comment that I heard on a number of occasions is, if everybody knows what has to happen, that is what you just laid out, what the president will and won't do, and what House Republicans can and can't do. If everybody seems to know what the end game is, and even now I hear more members than ever talking about, yeah, well, I guess if we had to do something like something like the Ryan Murray Ryan, depending which party you are, depends on the name that you put first. If something like that comes along, I guess that might be okay. I mean, nobody's really excited about it, and I understand that, but everybody seems to believe now that that's what's going to happen at some point, that that's what has to happen at some point. And I guess the frustration, what I'm hearing inside the agencies is, why don't we just do it and get it over with?
So make it happen, all right?
Yeah.
Right. And remember, and so the answer, sort of the glib but not so glib answer is, you know, what I call the they got to have the breakup to make up period. And even if they know they're going to make up in the end, they got to, both sides, it's in both sides' interest politically to seem like they're taking a hard line, negotiating hard, both sides, you know, they want to, each
side
wants to draw a little
bit. But everybody knows it's BS at this point.
You and I do, and probably most people who actually are affected by these shenanigans do, you know, but Mr. and Mrs. America living in Terre Haute, who all they care about is, you know, will my interstate get widened, and will the troops fight, and, you know, they're not paying attention, and you know, what's going on with the Duggars, they're not paying attention to this at the moment. And they'll only pay attention when the histrionics get big and when everybody's playing the countdown clock music, and then it'll work out. Remember that the Ryan Murray budget deal, which everybody hails as sort of a model of what could happen and what's going to happen, and everybody saw that coming in the summer of 2013 as well. Excuse me, but we had to have a 16-day shutdown to get there.
I make this note to my terrific producer, Nicola Grisco, that that is the first ever reference to the Duggars on In Depth. So we should mark that down in case that's a historic occasion that
ever
we
a trivia question.
Ever need to commemorate. So what's the next likely thing to happen when they come back next week, David?
You know, I think it's going to look like it's stalling out for a little bit because the House Republicans, the House is already running into some trouble finding appropriations bills that they can get passed at the current sequester number. And in other words, they essentially have to pass these bills at living with that sequester number, and they've passed all the bills they can get through at the reduced rate. The next one, there are a couple that are going to start to pile up. The transportation housing bill is ready to go. It's ready for floor consideration, but it's going to likely run into the same mess that it ran into a couple of years ago when it was out on the floor for, I think, a couple of 3 days and was essentially pulled apart in two very different directions with a bunch of Republicans even saying it didn't spend enough, and adding amendments so that it spent so much more that they dug themselves into a big budgetary hole, and the leadership had to basically give up debating the bill because they knew it was violating all of their promises.
David Hawkins, the senior editor at Roll Call. And a quick sidebar before I let you go. You have a terrific piece up on your Hawkins Here blog that we have linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth about something that strikes me, quite frankly, after I read your column, as being a little bit creepy. If some senior leader at a federal agency slept in his or her office.
Yes.
If they just moved in, people on the Hill would go ballistic about that, David, and yet you write that there are any number of members of Congress who are doing exactly that, and some of them wear it as a badge of honor.
Oh, many of them wear it as a badge of honor. And yep, the numbers that I kept, the number that you used to keep hearing was 50. Now the kind of consensus number is that as many as 70. So that's approaching, 15% of the House members are living in their offices. And they, with a straight face, don't seem to think that there's anything untoward or weird about this. Many of them wear it as a badge of honor. They say, that shows that I'm frugal and disconnected from Washington. And they don't seem to, when you make the counterargument, which is, yes, and it sounds like you're freeloading off the taxpayers, they're like, really? How? How am I doing that?
Disconnected from Washington, it's exactly the opposite.
Well, I have to say that.
They've moved into subsidized housing. I love the line that you quoted from Joaquin Castro, the congressman from Texas, whose brother is the HUD secretary. Is beautiful. I've been joking with my brother. He should have HUD designate this place a public housing project. It's beautiful, David.
Thank you very much. Yes, he spoke to me, as it were.
Thank you very much, as always, my friend.
Thanks a lot.
You know, we'll never go out of business finding wacky things to talk about Congress, will we?
Absolutely true.